All right. Well, welcome to another episode of See More Potential. Play on words right there. I got a great guy with me this week. He's become my new BFF. I got to be honest with you. Sean. Sean Riley is with us on the call. If you're watching this on a video format, then you can see his beautiful face. But Sean's the founding partner of Rath Capital Partners, venture fund, an investment advisory firm focused on the return to our clients. I'm just reading this straight off his LinkedIn, by the way. I'm not that smart. Value add is part of what they do for entrepreneurship, finance, investment background with a technology focus for several prominent investment banks and large public financial institutions and financial services firms. He's the executive chief officer at Rubicon Holdings Incorporated. It's a private equity firm, and chief executive officer of Accelerant Inc., high growth staffing firm. Now I gotta.
That was a treat. I love that.
It makes you sound like a boring fart. I'm just gonna go 0 degrees, right?
First of all, thanks for having me on, and secondly, more importantly, it's not like a Bumble profile. It's my LinkedIn. What do you want it to read, like a Harlequin romance or something? Come on.
But though, it's like let's go straight at it, because you and I have. We've had a couple of really good conversations. I'm excited to sit down and break bread with you. I think tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow
we're going to break bread, grab some steaks. But one of the things that was attractive about this friendship, if you will, was the fact that just in the reading of the LinkedIn profile of Sean Riley, I mean, it's like, dear Lord, give me something. Like, I'm sober 32 years, but I think I might pick up a drink if I have to read that again. But, you know, that dry financial front door, the thing that was really cool about you, brother, was that when you opened the door, you just showed that, you know, that's the certificate on the wall.
Exactly.
Now here's Sean Riley. So yeah. Let's do that. Talk about Sean Riley. Talk about that journey. Share a little bit about growing up. I think it's always good to get an origin story and how you ended up being the guy with all the certificates on the wall.
You know, it's interesting because I when I look at my LinkedIn profile, my resume or whatever, it's certainly what I've done, but it's not who I am. You know, it's my professional experience and my work experience, but it's not who I am as an individual. If you ask my parents, I'm a smart mouth, stubborn punk. You know what I mean? That for some reason, people trust me with managing their money. Yeah, I don't really, you know. So I try to stay true to myself, not because it's a grand thing and all these self-help books say that. I try to stay true to myself because I'm dumb enough. I can't be anybody else. I can't fake it. But, you know, I grew up in Foxborough. I'm the oldest of three kids. I grew up about a mile and a half from the Patriots. But growing up, my favorite team was the Miami Dolphins. And people look at me like, oh, how could you live so close and not be a Patriots fan? I was born in 1968. The Patriots sucked.
Yeah, they did. They
sucked so bad that they
was that the Grogan. Was that the Grogan days?
Oh,
it
yeah,
was like Grogan, Steve Grogan, yeah. And the rest of them. How sad was it back then, man?
Well, their home games weren't televised, so you got to root for who's ever on the black and white in the living room. I mean, you can't.
Yeah,
you know. And then I remember at halftime, the games were free. You could walk in after halftime. And it was back in the days of glass bottles being, I remember my dad took us to a Patriots game and watching glass beer bottles sail over my forehead onto the, I mean, you were taking your life in your hands going
that
to
sounds,
a, you
know, hold on a minute. That sounds like a Chelsea football match when I was a kid back in London. That's exactly, we were in cages. Was.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You know, and that was the day of the racetrack, the horse track was right next door. And we would walk from my house to go to the Patriots game. Dave, we're walking through like, you know, 60, 70 year old horse trainers that have nothing to do when it's not a race. They drinking all sorts of liters of who knows what, probably homemade.
Yeah.
And we're trotting through, you know, me and my brother, or me and my friend. Oh, you know, what could possibly happen? And my dad's like, well, walk it because you're not going to get a ride. What do you think? I'm going to drive you up there? Okay. We'll see you. No cell phones. We'll see you after the game, maybe. You can get through the paddock, all right.
Different world, brother. Yeah, different time.
Totally was. Yeah.
What did your father do for work? What was the influence of him on you and your brother? What was dad's business?
You know, my dad was in banking. It was retail banking, consumer banking. He worked for a bunch of different banks that essentially got gobbled up by bigger banks. So he worked for one that was called Consumers Bank, which is a bank in Worcester, but it essentially became Bank of New England. And he started as a credit analyst for Sears and Roebuck. So he's always had kind of a business background, but he's like I am. I mean, I brought my dad to a Red Sox game and we had green monster seats. So it was, I have arrived. I might as well have bought my dad a house. Like we are going to sit at the green monster. First thing he says to me, Sean, my knees bother me. Can you find the elevator? Cause I'm not sure we can go up the stairs. I'm like, it's the green monster. We got to take the stairs. I don't think I can make it today. What? But he would go and he's given me the Riley curse. He will go anywhere and see somebody he knows. And if he doesn't know them, you would think that he does. I don't know if you know Maria Stefano. She's a local newscast. I think she's on Fox.
Sure.
We get behind her and her poor husband in the beer line at Fenway Park. 40 minutes later, her and her husband and I are buying each other beers as we listen to my dad talk to her about stories of who knows what and who cares. I'm like, Dad, do you know her? No, never talked to her. I know she lives in Foxborough, but I've never talked to her. I'm like, it's the third inning. You're out of your mind. We missed the game.
That's interesting. Let me ask you something there, because, you know, I think about my wife, for example, her social fabric, if you will, her social interactive skills is a lot less than what you just described, right? Like my wife, she has a little anxiety sometimes in those, you know, those open conversations and hi, how are you and all that stuff. Yeah. It sounds like your father would talk, as we used to say back in England, the hind legs off a donkey, right? Oh, just get into a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're a Brit. Irish are the same. We're storytellers. That's why we get put on this earth. And he will talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And he really gave that. I think it's a big asset because it's not so much. I could talk to 10,000 people at a podium. I could talk to two people at a party I've never met. But I mean, look at you and I. What, 4 weeks ago, we didn't even know each other.
Yeah, right. Sure.
You know? And it's an ease. First of all, I believe very much in a human connection. And that's what I need. It's something that I need. I crave that in a way. But the second thing, Dave, is, you know, people will say, well, you do motivational speaking and you've talked to big audiences before. How do you get the self-confidence? Oh, it's not self-confidence. I just don't give a shit what people think. So you put me in front of a podium, I'll talk all day. But I just don't have that filter.
Yeah.
And I think my dad gave that to me. I'll talk to, you know, anybody as long as I'm getting, we can talk about vibrations a little bit, but as long as I'm getting a good vibe, I'll talk to. I mean, you and I didn't know each other from a hole in the head, and through LinkedIn, we connected, and then it's been a personal kind of adventure since we connected. I mean, that's a powerful thing. That doesn't just happen, you know, by chance.
I've thought about that, right? Because, you know, I, like you, spend a lot of time in conversation, right? And I also find a lot of people they're just not authentic, right? It's not based in authenticity. It's based in ulterior motives. It's based in smoke and mirrors. And one of the things that, the major thing that was great about you and I having that first conversation was, and it's simplified, you just said it, other people's opinions of me are none of my business. Now I can live in truth, right? I can talk in truth. I can tell you where I fail. I can tell you where I do really well. I can. Yeah. I think you and I even bought some of our preconceived ideas and notions to that conversation as well. Like I was shitting all over you guys in the financial industry, and you're like, wait a minute, this guy, you know, we're supposed to be building a relationship. I'm like, oh, you stiff shirt, stuck up financial fucker, and you're like, no, you're right,
Absolutely,
we deserve it.
Yeah, we deserve
Talk about. You said you crave human connection. It's almost like a you know, I don't want to go as strong as an addiction. What do you mean by human connection? Because, you know, shaking somebody's hand is a connection. What's your definition of a true human connection? What is that?
So my definition is something you give and something that you get back. A handshake is great. And you could argue that you're giving something and you're getting something back. But to your point, it may or may not be genuine. It's instant. So it's kind of hard to tell. But along with connections, and that word gets used a lot, but I actually mean a some sort of more than just a peripheral meeting. You get a vibration, you get a attraction, if you will, to that person. And it transcends across social media or telephone or Zoom or whatever, whatever you're using. And a connection for me, like I said, is getting something back. You know, you're as old as I am. I'm 53. You used to say, oh, we hit it off. Or people even say, oh, I got a really good vibe from that person. Well, that's what I'm talking about, is an actual connection, something where we have something.
Are you there, Sean?
Yeah, I can hear you. I lost
internet for a second there. I got it back. Okay, we'll just cut that. You know what? We might not even cut that bit out. Like, we might just leave that in there. That's how we are here. You know what I mean?
Hey, one take Riley, man. You put it on the teleprompter. I'm going to read it.
Yeah, we're talking about that human connection, more than just a handshake and a peripheral, you know, hi, how are you? It's what you were describing for me was what I call the law of reciprocity. Right. Exactly. The ability to give and to also receive without any attachments to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. And like, I'll talk a little bit about energy and vibrations for a second. What do I mean by that? Adults and particularly men are trained at a very young age, and it seems to be getting younger, to deaden or numb a gut feel. We call it gut feel, but a vibration. What you're actually feeling is energy. You have children. I am sure your babies, if you hand your baby to somebody, they might scream bloody murder and nobody can figure out what it is. But you might give your baby to somebody else and they're, wow, that's the baby whisperer. All of a sudden they go to sleep. Or when they're little kids, you know, parents do a good way of sugarcoating things. Oh, he or she is just shy. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes they're actually getting a bad vibe from whoever that person is. Men in particular, but adults, we numb that down. We don't go with the gut anymore. That's why there's podcasts and books and, oh, you got to go with your gut and go from your heart and all that stuff. And I mean, I've gone through programs to kind of reprogram myself to think like, but you get a vibration. Animals have it. You go up to a dog, some dogs will start barking at another dog or another person. Sometimes they'll just walk by and completely have no problem whatsoever. That's a transference of energy. So I look at connections with somebody like you, for example, and that could have gone a million different ways, our connection on LinkedIn. Could have been, hey, how are you? Yeah. Great. You know, hey, good to meet you. You know, hope all's well, blah, blah, blah. And neither one of it's genuine. It might be genuine, but it's not going to go anywhere. But you have a connection with that person. You feel a vibe or a vibration and you're like, wow, there's something there. We're just particular. And I'll talk about men, cause I am one. We are trained at a very early age to not feel like that. Oh no, you gotta be friendly. You gotta be self-confident and get in there and talk to many people. That doesn't always the most effective way to have it. It's a forced connection. It's like forced networking. Who the hell likes to go to a forced networking event to just
speed networking. Exactly. Here's my business card. Here's your business card. Let's do this thing. Let's not do this thing.
Okay. So you never hear from them again. Yeah. It's the same thing.
Let me ask you this. And I'm interested to hear your answer sincerely. That vibration, that gut feeling, that gut sensation, I don't know about you. I'll share mine real quick. I don't get it all the time. It's like it's almost, I would say, like 5 out of 100, maybe. I mean, the odds are really low. Is it the same for you? Like, you spend your time and energy with few people rather than with many?
Yeah, you know, there's that old quote that I actually like is the older you get, the smaller your circle gets.
Yeah.
Because it's not about popularity so much. It's more about having true connections. It's just when you're a teenager, you don't think in terms of how I do now. But your circle gets smaller because you're looking for depth, not breadth of a relationship. That doesn't mean that you're not open to other people, but to your point, you're going to feel a connection less and less, because I think as we get older, we're more comfortable with ourselves, and that's where we start listening to and relying on our gut feel. When you're a teenager or a kid or even your early 20s, there's so much noise and so much pressure to do something, to be career, to start a family, whatever it is. Yeah. You ignore that inside of yourself. So when you talk about, oh, I've met 100 people and I, you know, let's be honest, like five of them, that's, yeah, you're listening to your vibe. You're listening to your gut, or it's actually your heart. It's not your gut. We just like to man everything up and say, oh, it's a gut. Well, it's actually
my gut.
It's an emotional thing. And, you know, people will say, well, how are you successful? How did you get your business to where you go? And I grew up, when I went to college and I graduated, I never thought, Dave, that I would start a I thought I'd work in a big company or a big bank for the rest of my life. I never thought I'd hang my own shingle. And now I'm not wired to work for anybody else. I'm literally, this is it for me. I can't work for somebody else. And one of the reasons is because I've become so comfortable with myself that I listen to my gut or heart 100% of the time. That doesn't mean I'm going to get the result that I was thinking.
Right.
It just means that I'm following my mind follows my gut more than the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's explore that a minute. Let me jump in a second, because I think you're hitting on something for me that I really resonate with. This ability to relate right size with my fellow man. That's the little caption, right?
Yep.
So if you're able to relate right size with your fellow man, how impactful is that on the success of your business? I know the answer for me. I'd like to hear your answer on it.
So that's a great point. So we are conditioned to have this work-life balance. There's no such thing.
Doesn't exist.
The same skill set, Dave, that you use to go raise money are the exact same skill sets you use at a dinner party. Mm-hmm. If you're the center of attention at a dinner party, for good or bad, you're going to be more adept at speaking publicly or going out to raise money or having a connection with a group of people or a person easier. It's not impossible, but it's easier than, so a lot of people focus on a skill set. Well, you have to have a public speaking skill set. Yeah, but you have to be wired from a personality perspective to be open to that. So for me, because I crave a human connection personally, I also crave that and need it and use it as an asset. I just can't function that way.
I get it. You kind of zoned out a little bit there. The internet's giving me a little bit of grief again, which is super frustrating. If there was a human being in front of me right now that I could relate to, I would pound the snot out of him, because I hate it when shit doesn't work. Whoops. You just got a little insight, a window opened. Look, I love the topic. I love the, it's applicable, right? It's an application. One of the things that I found difficult was, good communication skills, good orator. I could get up in front of a room. I've done it in front of 10,000 people. And to your point, I've done it in front of a couple of people. How hard is it to listen? Because I ask myself that question too. Like, I pray to be a better listener at times.
Yeah.
Do you resonate with that? Because we're always on the way out rather than receiving information.
Yes. That's a very, very good point. So communication is, there's a sender and receiver, and that's just the mathematical equation. But you have to listen, but you also have to hear. You have to you know, what's that quote? Most people listen to react. You should listen to understand. Mm. And geez, I just lost his name. Who's the big Tibetan monk? The Dalai Lama.
Dalai Lama. Yeah.
He said, when you're speaking, all you're speaking is about something you already know. But when you're listening, you're actually going to learn something that you may or may not know. And probably you're going to learn something new.
Love that.
So it's hard. It's very challenging, especially for a man to be open to listening. But I try to spend a lot of time focusing more on listening and understanding. You know, sometimes we're so quick to react, and I get like this when I get excited or I love the topic we're talking about, I'll chime in, and you're not even, you can't even process what you just heard that fast. So what the hell are you doing talking about it when you don't even know what the left?
Exactly. Yeah. You know what it is? We're like little kids. Like, you know, I get a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old at home and a 27-year-old that's doing just fine. And, it's like that repetitive, they get excited about something and the repetitive direction we have to give them as a parent to keep them on point and keep them on focus to achieve the goal. I love this. I love it. Yeah. So look, I want to know, like, I think the people who listen to us and who watch this are going to get a sense that something's a little bit different here from your regular financial podcast, right? You know, it's a little more, to use the word, vulnerable. It's you've said a couple of times, especially for men, like breaking down some of those preconceived notions, ideas, and barriers. But here's my question. Wrath Capital raised maybe 150, 180 million in the past few years. How on earth does that correlate that you bring vulnerability, you know, a breakdown of manly, you know, preconceived notions and ideas. Oh, and by the way, we raised 150 mil just on the side because we asked nicely with our hearts.
We're jumping around one day, and you know, they just got to check.
And one day, talk about business. Talk about who you're in business with, because you don't do it on your own. You got a couple of partners. Talk about them. Talk about the process. Share a little on that for me, would you?
So again, it goes back to connections for me. And my partners are one of them I've known for since middle school.
Yeah.
The other one I've known for 4 or 5 years. You have to have trust and faith, not just in your company. Like, that's an easy way to say things, but your company is people. You have to have trust and faith in what we're all doing and what our purpose is. Now, that's not just an internal thing. You have to exude that external. Nobody's going to give me money if I have no idea what I'm talking about, or more importantly, if I'm faking it.
Yeah.
So yes, you have to have your act together. You have to have a good presentation, but more than that, at least for me, I have to believe in what we're doing. I have to believe in what our firm's mission is, but also I have to believe in what my individual purpose is. My individual purpose is to help people. It just so happens I do that in the financial arena. I help investors, they give me money that we manage. I help entrepreneurs because we take that money and we put it into companies and they do great things. If I didn't believe in that purpose, it's just a job. It's not, I don't want to get corny and say it's a vocation or a calling, but for me, it fulfills my purpose. People and helping people is really what my purpose is. And there's a, you know, I could do many things, but I just happen to have a personal interest in finance and money and how it works. And more importantly, starting companies and helping people start companies. But you have to have that. That's why I was saying earlier, there's no separation between business life and professional life. There's no work-life balance. It doesn't exist. That's a corny way that MBAs like me used to categorize stuff and put things in neat boxes and okay, we're going to do work now, but you know, life, you know, my personal life has to suffer a little bit. That's not how it works. So if I'm a people person and I like to tell stories and in my personal life, I like to joke around and not seek to be the center of attention, but sometimes it just gravitates that way. I'm that same person pitching to 40 investors sitting in a room. Is it the same content? No, it's not, particularly depending on who the audience is. But the delivery is still natural to me.
Yeah,
it's still the same. I'm still the same person. And you said this at the beginning, you have to be genuine. And you know, you've been far enough in your career, you know when you're being sold to, and it's mm-hmm. the biggest turnoff mm-hmm. there is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not a salesperson. I'm not a business dev person. I just am genuine. I am who I am, and that will not change. And a lot of times I'm a complete failure. And, you know, for every 150 people I talk to, I might get two that might be interested, but at least I know at the end of the day, I was myself, and I don't have to deliver something, including who I am, to someone that I'm not and our firm isn't.
Right.
So it's a genuineness, and you just can't, at least I can't, be somebody else. You can't. And that's how I've managed my, I actually had a review. It's so funny. I had a dinner with him in the last winter, one of my first supervisors I ever had at State Street. And he's a great guy.
Yeah.
A great guy. And he said to me, he actually put in a review, "Sean is exceedingly positive." I'm like, what? I'm getting it. What the hell does that mean? Well, I'm getting a demotion because I'm positive.
Exceedingly
positive. And I remember my mom telling me the very first time, so this was probably 1974, I was what, six, I went to the dentist. The dentist in my official dental record says Sean is overly chatty. Appointment went long because I'm six. I mean, what? And you just hold on to those are gems. So my point of all this is you just have to be yourself. And if you can't be yourself and talk to investors, entrepreneurs, teachers, doctors, you, me, who are you if you're not yourself?
You know what's so cool about that? I think we were separated at birth. I know I got a couple of years on you. Listening to you tell that story of the dentist and et cetera and overly positive. My school, so in England, you go to infant school, primary school, and then secondary school. And in primary school, which is like grades 1 through 5 in the States, my report card said, David can do better. He exceeds all expectations in the classes he enjoys. So in other words, okay. If I enjoy it, get out of the way, I'm going to beat anybody at it. And then my favorite one was French. When I got to secondary school, we had to do French. The quote was, "David should treat the classroom as a classroom and not as a stage." It's French, man. You got to have the best French accent. And I bet you did exactly the same thing in Spanish or whatever it was you were doing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To seek the attention.
I went to Catholic high school and I took 2 years of French for no other reason than I had to take a foreign language. And the only thing I retain is how to say the Hail Mary. So really? The nuns just beat prayer into us, whether it was English or French or whatever it was. And that was the extent of my French.
That's so good. That's so good.
I can say the Hail Mary perfectly, but I can't speak anything else.
My French was weak up until the point that I married my wife, Mary Boivin, with French Canadian. And we were dancing one night when we were dating, and she pulled me in close and she whispered in my ear and she said, "Je t'aime tout avec tout mon cœur, mon chéri." And I said, "I don't know what the hell you just said to me, but I love you." I'm in, whatever it was. You have me at je t'aime too. So I get it. So, all right, we digress a little. Tell me about business. Tell me about what it is that who you raise capital from. What's your process for raising capital? Where do you deploy that capital? And what's your sweet spot for returns for investors? Give me a little synopsis and a breakdown of that stuff.
So our tagline is we put the human capital back in venture capital, despite, you know, all the glowing glowing things you read about the VC and private investing market. It's a horrible place. And I use this joke a lot, and it's actually not funny. If you're a woman-owned business in Cleveland, Ohio, good luck getting investment capital. You're just not going to get capital from investors. We're of $600 billion that was invested last year. Less than 1% of it went to woman-owned companies.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous, right? That's to me is just so. what we do is, wrath actually means success in Gaelic. That's why it's an R and not a W. And we focus on the entrepreneur first.
Yeah.
Don't tell my investors that. By focusing on the entrepreneur and making their business successful, we in turn can make the investment more successful. We're not a unicorn hunter. I'm not going to, you know, go out and invest your money in Lyft and get 600 times. That's not us. Yeah. But what's different about us is, if you look at a typical VC portfolio, one and two are going to pay off a ton, and then projects 3 through 10 or 3 through 12 are going to be zero or negative. Our 12 projects, all of them are returning to the investor. It's not going to be, like I said, 600 times, but you're going to get an investment. So what do we look for? How do you do that? Two things. We try to make this really simple. We look for strongly managed companies, which is key, people, connections, who have a passion for what they're doing, that are close to or already revenue generating. So we're not a startup shop. With a little exception, we won't invest in a startup. We certainly won't bootstrap one, but we do have some that we advise on, that when they get to a certain point, they'll be successful. What's interesting is that I always use the analogy, we're rocket fuel. You have to build the rocket and you have to point it at Mars if you're going to Mars. And I'm going to fill that rocket up and we are going to take off. But I'm going to tell you something, Dave, if you're not pointed to Mars, we're going to be sitting there in the middle of space going, whoops. The other difference too is that we are kind of boots on the ground. We are selective about who we invest in. With one of the primary reasons is because we want to help the entrepreneur ourselves. The easiest thing we can do is give financial advice and write the check. There's this misnomer, though, that an entrepreneur knows how to run a company, knows everything about legal, HR, admin, operations, sales, all that stuff.
So much. So they much don't. Stuff.
And you know this. As an entrepreneur, just have an idea and barely know how to monetize it.
Yeah.
And a $2 million revenue company is very different than a $10 million revenue. So we are there for the entrepreneur to help them. If you need a CFO, we'll be the CFO. We'll go get a CFO if you need one. We can give all kind of the full breadth of the firm because we want you to be successful. I was a high school lacrosse coach for a long time. And I used to tell my players, if you're looking at the scoreboard and worried about what the score is, we're not going to be successful. You have to play as hard as you can. And for an investor even, and we've turned away investors that just aren't a good fit for us. If you're worried about what the return is, we're not interested because we're not just in the return game. Yes, of course, you're giving us an investment. We need to perform and we understand that. But that's not just all that we do. If we nurture and work with the entrepreneur, we're going to make that company more successful, which in turn changes the score of the game in our favor. Our investors are typically individuals or family owned offices or different types of groups of investors. They don't call them family offices in the Middle East, but they have groups of consortiums that pool together investment money, give it to an advisor, and then the advisor will invest it into funds like ours. We're completely industry agnostic. I don't have a funnel that says, oh God, we have 5 tech projects, we can't have a sixth. I don't want to sound callous and say I don't care about what industry it is, but we do take a deep dive into what the particular investment is, but it's not into some formula that kicks out, we need 5 more projects in biotech. We're not like that. We're agnostic in industry and geography. We're not
so good. Silicon Valley. So good to have that flexibility. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're in, you know, Bridgeport, Connecticut, no offense to Bridgeport, Connecticut, but you know, we'll take a look at it.
I nearly ended up on Bridgeport, Connecticut Police Department. Why are you gonna? That's the armpit of Connecticut. I love that town. I'll tell you that story when we have lunch tomorrow.
It's just so it's we try to make it simple so that it's hard for I mean, you know this, it's hard to raise money as an entrepreneur. And more importantly, which doesn't really get talked about, the more investment you take on creates a lot of downward pressure to you as an entrepreneur. You're serving two gods now. You're serving the performance of the company, but you're also serving the performance of the firm that put money into the whatever it is, the project.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that creates a lot, you know, suddenly you also get a lot of scope creep where the entrepreneur is like, oh gosh, we get $5 million. Now we're going to do this and we're going to do this and we're going to do this. And you get this broadening of what we're actually trying to focus the entrepreneur onto with that investment capital. So you need to, you know, you need a coach and you know, this word gets used a lot too, but a partner to be there with the entrepreneur to help operate that investment. Investors love that because they look at us like, oh, you're actually there babysitting, you know.
My money, my investment. Yeah. No, that's exactly. That's good. That's yeah. Good.
It's a little bit different. And you know, it sounds all great as an investment advisor and a money guy. We do it because yeah. We like it. We were entrepreneurs. We started Wrath ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
We have a particular appreciation to how much of a bitch it is to start a company
and raise money. So walk me through, like, I understand my world, obviously, right? I could put together a fund, a blind fund, and put, you know, assets in that fund and it pays a, you know, a targeted rate of return. Or I can, you know, do syndicated one-off deals. I could put yep. together a fixed income expansion fund. Like, I have that flexibility. How do you guys source deals? And is it a committee of just your team? Is there a third party committee? What does your committee look like to process an investment, and how does it get into the fund? I guess is the question that I'd like to get some clarity on.
So that's a great question. So what we do is when we get investment money, we'll pull it down when we're ready for the fund, or, you know, so you go out and get pledges. Everybody yep. lines up at yep. day zero. We yep. pull the money down. It's interesting you talk about projects. We thought that when we were starting out a few years ago, we were sitting there saying, gee, okay, we're getting all this money. Like, what? We don't have any, are we going to have enough projects?
Yeah.
We've never had an issue getting projects. And a lot of it has to do, is related to this conversation and the connection of people. It's, we hit it off with the entrepreneur. We get excited. Mm-hmm. To use a child's term, we get excited about a project. So we don't have any shortage. I mean, I bet last year, well, that was COVID. So last year we looked at 1,200 business plans, 1,200 people that wanted to start or have started or are running a company.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't invest in a lot of projects. So that's a huge, you know, kind of a backlog of projects that we want. Some of them you throw out immediately. Some of them sure. aren't there yet. You know, some of them are comical. The pitch, we had a biotech pitch, and you talk about joking around. There was cartoons in the pitch deck. And I'm like, guys, like, really? like well, you know, we're not.
That was mine, by the way. That was my ultra my ultra ego that sent that one in.
And the other thing that we do, I think, is a little bit different is our investment committee is made up of the partners in our firm, and we have yeah. to be unanimous.
Yeah.
And the reason why we are like that is so we can blame everybody if something goes south on us. But more importantly, we want everybody to be equally excited and not to be redundant of a phrase, but equally invested at the firm of a project that we undertake. It is, if I am excited about a project and I'm going to use a third party, an investor's money to do that, mm-hmm. I damn well better be able to convince my own people in my company that this is a good idea.
For sure.
If I can't do that, what am I doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the same in our company when we look at a deal. We've got three, four partners. They got to agree. It's got to be a good deal. Sure.
You got to have a good deal. And, you know, good isn't necessarily good versus bad. Good is feels good. Does this resonate with us?
It's a story. It's a story, exactly. Sean. Is the story good? Tell me the story. Right. Yeah.
And this is why I always go back to, those are the kind of things that in my professional life excite me, because in my personal life, they excite me. Two, we looked at a project. This will hit home for you. Two New York City firefighters, and they're entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And they said, and I never realized this, they are creating a technology that allows the unit that's responding to know what the best hydrant is to go to. Yeah. And I said, well, what do you mean? You can't just roll up to the red thing with the flag on the top and plug the hose in. No, no. He said, Sean, in New York City, you're going to know what day is trash day because they're throwing the trash all over the hydrants. You're not even see it. You got to know when the last thing was serviced. You got to know a ballpark what the pressure is. He goes, there's a picture of fire in a building and we're driving around a one-way city block trying to figure out where we're going to get water.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those kind of projects excite me because, you know, I'm not bright and I can understand that. I'd be like, you know what? Sounds like a good idea. That sounds like
GPS, like GPS tracking on each of the hydrants, something like that. Like a pinpoint. Yeah. Smart.
Exactly. Smart. Something that, you know, is technologically available now because you didn't have that technology before. Sure. But how awesome would it be to be sitting in a unit and call up a screen that says, yeah, go to this. I mean, you're shaving, if it's downtown New York City, you're shaving minutes off your response to whatever that particular thing is.
Yeah. Yeah. And every second counts. Yeah.
Right. It's things like that, that if I get excited about it, I can portray that to my investment community and I can portray that to my partners. So it becomes, we learn in business, like you can't be emotional. You have to be stoic. You got to be, you know, you can't let emotion, fuck that. You, of course you're going to be emotional. If I can't get excited about it, I'm not going to give you money.
Like, yeah. You just said it. One of the things is passion. If there's no passion in the entrepreneur, I'm not playing. I'm the same way.
We've talked to numerous entrepreneurs. And I've actually been in a pitch where I've stopped them. And they're like, yeah, this is what we're doing, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we sit there and look at the financials. They look good. The idea is awesome. Like, this is something else. There's no passion.
Yeah.
The founders could care less if and it's like, I'm not feeling it, man. Like, great idea. I'm not feeling it. You make it sound like you're waiting for the door to open. You're going to run outside.
You know what they are? Sure. You know what they are? They're entrepreneurs. They're not entrepreneurs. They're entrepreneurs. Right. Entrepreneur wannabes.
Exactly.
Can I ask you a question? I want to get some feedback on this. I've got my own ideas around this. There has been a shit ton. All right. That's a real metric measurement, by the way. Shit ton.
Yes, it is.
There has been a shit ton of economic relief capital come into the marketplace. I mean, billions of dollars.
Right.
I don't know that a lot of those businesses that took that economic relief capital are going to be in a position to, one, turn the business and keep it where it was pre-COVID. And number two, be able to make back those payments, even though they're 30-year fixed at 3.5%. You've got 24 months deferred payments, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I believe that there will be an M&A tsunami coming into the marketplace on businesses that were once viable and strong financially and now need an influx of capital to get them back on track with support and help. I wonder whether you agree with that or you think I'm just out there and left field on those kinds of thoughts. But I think there's going to be something coming because of all of that capital that came in, and I'm not sure it's all good.
I agree with that. I think that irrespective of what the cause of a business failure is, there are certain fundamentals that you have to look at, whether you're the government and you're giving them the dollar or I'm a private investor and I'm taking it out of my pocket, it's still a dollar. And what really matters is how it's being used. It doesn't matter where it comes from. And really the terms don't matter either. Is it a viable business? So in the M&A market, much like the venture capital investment market, you're looking at the viability of that business and how it's sustainable. You know, there was a lot of hype about COVID and we're going to capitalize on this business and we're going to be able to do this. And this opened up a bunch of markets and that's great. What happens when COVID is managed and goes away? There's not a whole lot of innovation running around with the flu vaccine. We pretty much have it under control, right?
Yeah. So
you have to look at the business plan in a much longer timeframe than it's driven by an event, right? I think there will, if you look at the cannabis market, I think there's going to be tremendous consolidation, particularly the United States, as they start to loosen the federal regulations around that. You're going to have particularly larger conglomerates up in Canada coming down and scooping up a lot of these profitable, but not scalable cannabis businesses. And it's important, you know, you always have to look at the function of the company as it relates to the marketplace it operates in. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how they're capitalized, whether it's government loans or private investment, or they bootstrap for themselves. Is what they're doing viable? Is it viable across multiple economic impacts, COVID, hurricanes, whatever it is? Mm. How are they going to grow the business? And to be honest, what is the market for that particular? I had somebody there in the auto industry, and they said, yeah, our target market is like a $600 billion market. I'm like, no, that's the total market. That's not your market. But that's what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be, you know, every time there's an upheaval or a displacement in a market, mm-hmm. you're going to have mm-hmm. opportunities. I think mm-hmm. that there are a lot of companies that were started during COVID, which was great because in a lot of ways, COVID provided an incubator mm-hmm. for folks to get really creative and start good companies. I think that COVID aside, it's still going to be a fundamentals market. And you have to look at, as I said, is it viable? Is it viable in the market? What's the growth? And all the same things we would look at anyways. I think that the federal government was a little bit loose with the amount of relief that it gave. I'm not a big, I'm in finance, but I'm not a huge relief guy. But I think that conversely, their perspective is different. They're trying to save jobs. So mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. respect, I'm mm-hmm. okay with that. But there are a lot of companies that were on the line of struggling way before COVID started. And this just accelerated their failure.
Yeah.
You know, but I think too, there's going to be a lot of opportunities to look at in your world too, in the real estate market. I mean, I'm personally waiting for a real estate correction because there's no inventory out there, but you have increase in inflation, you have an increase in interest rates. I mean, I think that the real estate market needs to temper down a little bit mm-hmm. to be sustainable. It needs mm-hmm. to correct just mm-hmm. a little, not a crash, but a correction so that the long-term can be sustainable. Because, I mean, you're in it. This market isn't going to stay like this.
Look, it's interesting. You know, you're coming from a purely a business standpoint, right? Multiple businesses. Like you said, you're agnostic to the business. You're agnostic geographically. Do the numbers make sense? You know, and in my world, Sean, it's the same thing in the multifamily ground up construction world. You know, whether we're on building or repositioning an existing structure, it's the same thing, brother. It's a business, supply and demand, right? Good team on the ground, execution of a business plan. Can you finance it at a number that makes sense so that everybody can make money? And do you have enough of a buffer in there for the old shit factor, which every business, you know, encompasses? Right. So, you know, it's not rocket science. But, you know, for us, it's a case of there's so many, I'm going to go 0 degrees. There's so many donkeys in the market, you know, selling bullshit, you know, shit on a shingle for the sake of moving capital investments around, you know, it almost becomes a little bit of a Batman, you know, I get out there and try and save the day. Look, man, as always, time flies by with you. We're coming up on the hour mark. Give me one good story about going to the Middle East and raising money. Tell me your partner fell off a camel. Tell me you got run over by a guy on a scooter. Tell me something. Good story.
You know, it's interesting. So one of the things that I found intriguing is it's like Vegas. You're flying over the desert and all of a sudden there's a city. I have never been more blown away by just the breadth of what's going on. One of the things that really resonated with me, and it's because I was there, but it's the innovation that individuals have. I mean, that place grew from nothing. Sure. It was essentially a port for trading goods. It was a trading post when it started, and now it's blown up into this metropolis. It's becoming a financial center, a cosmopolitan financial center in the world. We didn't go to the, we didn't stay in the Burj Khalifa, but we went there and they were talking about how much the building moves and the way that it's built so that wind won't blow it over.
Really?
And they're like, you know, if you'd want to come up to the, I forget what floor it was, the 130th floor. I'm like, no, snakes, clowns, and heights, man. I'm out. I'm out. That was it for me. I couldn't do it.
Never made it in the fire department. We got all three of those.
Yeah, I'll get a cat out of a small shrub. I'm not climbing up one of those ladders you guys go up. No, thanks. That's no, funny. Where's Riley? No, he's letting this thing burn to the ground. He's not going.
Burn, burn, baby, burn. He's got marshmallows out.
It was interesting to me to experience a very, very different culture and how things are. I mean, we have a law firm over there that looks at our contracts because they have to be written in a certain way, predominantly because it's a different language, but also because you're reading from right to left. And you can't.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, we're good here at phrasing things that if we don't know what we're talking about, makes zero sense. Yeah, we have to be delicate about how we. So I guess the biggest thing besides a building, you know, shaking by 6 feet on either side, depending on how windy the day is, it's just the immersion of that culture and seeing I couldn't believe I was there. I mean, here's a Irish kid from Foxborough, Massachusetts, and I'm walking around the desert of the other thing was, if you're a car guy, I saw a Bugatti Veyron one time on Rodeo Drive in LA. I was walking through and I saw two things. I saw a Bugatti Veyron and a porn star. And those were the only two things that I really could associate with or recognize. When I was in Dubai, I saw 10 of them in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
It's just you know, you look over at the intersection and there's a Bugatti, Ferrari, Lamborghini. It's like unbelievable. So the amount of wealth that is at our disposal globally is really resonating.
It's crazy, isn't it? The amount of wealth that's out there that needs that needs somewhere to go. It's look, Sean, as always, brother, every minute with you is a joy, and I mean that sincerely. I'm not blowing smoke up anyone's tushy on that. Anybody who hears us, sees us, wants to reach out to you, make a connection, have a conversation, see if they pass the Riley sniff test. How can they get a hold of you, bro?
You can always email Sean, S-E-A-N, at RathCapitalPartners.com. Send me an email and, you know, we'll have a chat and a connection. And it won't be as good as the one you and I have, but I'll certainly respond. I love talking to people, particularly if they just want something. Hey, can you help me with this business real quick? I'm, you know, not to sound corny, but I'm here to serve. So
I just had a vision. Ready? Here's the vision. I want me, my partner, Walter, you and your partner to go to Dubai together and present real estate and your fund structures in a combined environment. That's what I want. Cause I'm going right to the top and I'm gonna sway around and I'm going to make fun of you for not coming up.
That little thing, that little black speck you see down at the bottom, that's me waving at you. Cause that's waving all you're going to get from me.
Sean, pleasure, brother. Pleasure. Looking forward to breaking bread tomorrow.
Always a pleasure, Dave.
Reach out to my friend Sean. He's got answers to your questions. Once again, a great episode of See More Potential, the podcast. Brother, take care. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on. My pleasure. Amen. I'll talk to you.